Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and currently we're waiting for Mr. Edwards to take a seat in the studio as he got caught in some traffic going through downtown Minneapolis. I'd like to welcome everyone tonight on this beautiful, hot, and humid Wednesday evening that tuned into the show. We have a lot of things going on tonight. We're going to have probably an extra long show, and we hope you all call in. At the top of the hour, I just want to give you that call-in number, which is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you have a topic or you would like to voice your opinion about one of our comments, we invite you to call us and talk to us and tell us how you're feeling. But first, I guess we need to take care of business here. We have a lot of things going on in the community. Tomorrow night we have the, they have the Urban League dinner, $100 a plate. Go down there, fill your face, listen to Urban League's president, Mark Morial, talking and probably trying to pitch the Common Core, which the Urban League came out with a official press release last month saying that they fully support the Common Core. Which is kind of interesting because we've heard nothing but bad things about that. And some of you educators, if you'd like to call in and if you have real-time experience with that, we'd appreciate it. That number is 347-426-3904. But before we go on any further, we have a guest on the line today. As you guys know, we've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks. There's a press conference at 1 p.m. this Friday at Hennepin County Government Center. New Perspectives Behavioral Health System, and the founder and owner is with us here tonight on the air, Mr. John Woods. Mr. Woods, how are you?
Just fine. How are you?
Okay. And I understand that you've ramped up your efforts and you're planning this press conference to go off without a hitch on Friday at 1 p.m. And just tell me, can you give me a little background on what's going on?
Well, basically what's going on is that I was on your show about, 2-3 weeks ago,
yes,
and New Perspective Behavioral Health System has been discriminated against as far as our client population, 1,800, and they have acted in such a way where the relationship that we have is inequitable. And so what they did was they are systematically trying to put New Perspectives out of business. So we met with 1800 Chicago, not 1800.
Brother Woods, when you say they put you, who is they? Could you just identify
I met with the county administrator. I'm sorry about that. The county administrator, Rex Holzman and his team, Jennifer DeCabellis. And so they made some promises to us in terms of getting more clients for my program so we can succeed. Okay. And what happened was they made some promises that they said that they would honor in terms of getting us more business. And so they fell through in terms of their commitment. And so what I decided to do after that was to take it to the public. Okay, and get some petitions, and so we can possibly meet with the board to discuss our demands and whatnot in terms of not being treated fairly. And so this is where we're at right now with the press conference.
Now, when you
Friday,
say the board, again, Brother Owen, so that our listening audience
of,
is clear,
the commissioners.
We're talking about the County Board of Commissioners, which are 7 elected officials from this county, correct?
Correct.
That's right. Okay. Continue on, sir.
And so we've been gathering petitions, and we're setting up to have this press conference Friday at 1 p.m., and we're asking individuals to come out and support us.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Mr. Allen, but I thought we need to get that specific pertinent information out who really we're talking about here.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And we just, I'm sorry, Mr. Edwards, the phone rang in the studio and we just had a call from City Council member Blog Yang, but we'll get to that in a minute, who is actually in support of Mr. Woods and what he's doing on Friday. But, well, Mr. Woods, I guess my next question would be, you know, here in the black community in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota, we've been told that, you know, there's a lot of leaders out there that will, you know, speak up on your behalf and assist you through this turbulent time with the county. Has any of those people come forward or been established at this point?
At this particular point in time, I have not received one phone call from anybody, okay? Senators, black leaders in the community, nobody has called to find out exactly what's going on and how they can support new perspectives in this campaign to get, you know, so my program won't be pushed out of business. I have not received one phone call.
And I understand that you actually reached out to Mr. Scott Gray at the Minneapolis Urban League through his assistant, Ms. Linda Anderson, and he has not called you back either.
He hasn't responded.
Oh, wow. Wow, you know, that's interesting.
Okay, no, let me just ask this question for the purpose of fairness and transparency, Mr. Jones. I mean, I know he's a busy leader, and I know, in fact, he has a big dinner tomorrow night in which the head of the National Urban League will be here, a keynote speaker, $100 a plate. but is it maybe that he doesn't know me? Maybe, you know, his core staff hasn't kept him up to speed on this particular matter?
Well, we contacted him at least about a month ago. So
Oops.
To say that a month ago, we've contacted him, and so he hasn't responded. He hasn't sent us a letter saying that he acknowledges this. Nothing.
Oh, he's not sent a letter acknowledging
support.
Receipt of your letter indicating the situation that is at hand. Would that be a slick way of on my part? Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Well, now, Mr. Woods, we understand from the research that we did here in the production meeting that you actually sent letters to all of the Hennepin County commissioners, Senator Al Franken, Senators Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden, and you also sent a letter to the other African-American treatment facility, Turning Point. So all those letters got to these people, right? So they were addressed correctly?
Well, I didn't send a letter to Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden. Okay, I need to clear that up. I did not send a letter to them. But I sent a letter to all the commissioners, and so they got the letters.
Okay.
As well as the African-American leaders that you mentioned previously, is that correct? Excluding the two state senators, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And go ahead, Ms. Allen. We want absolute clarity and transparency.
Exactly. Well, I find this really peculiar, Mr. Woods and Mr. Edwards, because I guess, you know, no letters came back to you, did they? I mean, because it seems like no one called you, no one contacted you. It looks like the letters might have all got there, you know,
I sent one to Turning Point and it came back, return to sender.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. Return to sender. Okay.
Correct.
So how many other letters came back returned to sender, Mr. Woods?
None. And it was nine letters that went out.
That normally tells me, Mr. Allen, that somebody at the big organizations received the letter. I threw it in the waste paper basket, shredded it, or
no, the letter came back
to
me.
I guess that'll be what will be said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
actually, the
letter was open. And
it was what?
Open. When it got back to me, it was open.
Oh, okay. So the United States Mail had delivered per its obligation, and someone at the other end opened the letter, examined the content of the letter, and then Okay. All right, got you.
I don't know if they examined the content of it, but I know when it came back to me, it had returned the sender.
Well, normally, Brother Woods, my long, long experience says that a person takes time to open the letter. Normally, if you didn't want to be bothered with, you know, junk mail or such, you just tear it in half. When you open up the letter, one of the things that you do 99 out of 100 times is examine what the content is, and then you make a determination to do what you're going to do. So I just would have to take the position that if one took time to open a letter, that one took time to examine the material inside and then made a determination to do whatever it was that they did or didn't do. Okay. All right. I will. Okay. All right. Boy, we got real busy leadership in our community, Mr. Allen.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do. So this press conference is going to be this Friday, correct?
Correct. At 1 p.m. at the Government Center in Skyway.
Skyway level. Okay. All right. And that is a public space, by the way, Mr. Edwards, and people are free. That is what's called a open space for
common area. As a part of the doctrine of British common law.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Anything else of Mr. Woods, Mr. Allen? I've concluded whatever questions I wanted to ask.
Okay. Well, if there's a number that they can call Mr. Woods if they want to find out any more information about the press conference on Friday afternoon.
Sure. You can reach me. I can be reached at area code 612-465-8110, or either I can be reached at 612-419-7868.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we look forward to getting an update next week on how the press conference went, and we appreciate you joining us tonight on the show.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Boy, it must be tough. You're involved in so many different things, as some of our powerful leaders are, that, you know, they open the mail and just make a determination right there that they can't. But normally you put a little card in and says, received, and we'll take under advisement the best of luck. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of what you do in the big world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
At least you do that when you – I'm very, you know, strong on this particular point, Mr. Allen. When you take a letter and you open it up, wow. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't want to – I understand we had a city council member holding or called in, or what? What's that? What's going on there?
As we called on the studio line, and I hope he'll call back from the –
Okay. Well, let me tell you what I think that he's calling in regards to is that – because one of my other phones was also ringing – discussion has emerged just in the last, let's say, 10 hours. It started at a meeting involving municipal and state agencies in St. Paul, dealing with diversity and the great job that the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department under Velma Corvell has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what came out in a series of conversations that were kind of monitored is that Councilman Yang, Democrat Fifth Ward, chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee, which Ms. Corbell's department reports to whenever she gets ready. I understand that the councilman, we'd certainly like the councilman to give us a call back and verify, or, you know, however he politically feels he needs to make it, that he has asked her this afternoon for her resignation.
Wow.
And so actually, there's a certain level of exclusivity here. We are exclusively, you know, kind of breaking that story. Didn't want to upstage him. But it has been a great discussion at a civil rights, quote-unquote, diversity meeting in the city of St. Paul, where, in fact, Ms. Corvell's number, I don't know, whatever she is, Ms. Francois, who is the director of, like, One Minneapolis and is supposed to be getting all that diversity and equity information out. You remember her.
Identified
kind of in the paper. That she was in a discussion with another person who heads up some department of the state and was talking about Director Corvell had received that letter. In fact, she went on in this discussion this afternoon to say that if Velma left, she would leave.
Well, that'd be good.
And Miss Francois is the sister of Wanda Kirkpatrick of the powerful Met Council, in which Gary Cunningham, who we'll be talking about later on tonight, is a member of the board. So I assume that the councilman probably wanted to clarify. Certainly we wanted to offer him the chance to respond to what at this point is a rumor, except staff members of the Civil Rights Department are discussing this in conversations with other government officials. So, you know, that makes it fair game for journalists, even black journalists.
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir. Now, Mr. Allen, I understand tonight you have some update on the move by Gary Cunningham, former vice president of operations for the powerful Northwest Area Foundation, his move from the Northwest Area Foundation to MEDA, if you will. People are saying, such as Louis King and others were saying, that this is a great lateral move and et cetera. I understand you did an forensic examination, and could you just share with us what the difference in salary is going to be?
Yeah, I pulled up their 2012 990s from charityguide.org, and Yvonne Chung Ho, the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Economic Development Association, made
the
101.
He's outgoing.
He'll
be stepping down
outgoing.
At the end of this month, right? Okay.
Outgoing, $101,000 a year plus $24,000 in benefits.
Okay. $101,000 in salary, $24,000 for a total of about $125,000, right?
Yeah, $125,000.
Okay.
You know, round it off. And then also, I have here Mr. Gary Cunningham, and I went to the Northwest Area Foundation's 2012 990s, which shows the 2012 amount that he was paid for that year of 2012, which was $200,663 plus $33,957. In benefits.
Well, wait a minute, Mr. Allen. I need to see if we could. So, Mr. Cunningham, unless he's put together a hell of a package coming in with MEDA, is taking a reduction of over $100,000+ in salary?
Yeah, that's what it looks like, Mr. Edwards. It looks like he's going to take a hit if he is taking a hit. Of over $100,000.
Well, yeah. Certainly. I mean, you're talking about 125 as opposed to 134. My math tells me that's $111,000 difference. I repeat that again: a difference of $111,000. $111,000. In fact, those numbers look good. Rounded off 111.000. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
We're both looking
at our calculators.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct.
I'm puzzled by this because I have noted since we first broke this story that I've seen nothing in the major white newspapers about Mr. Cunningham's change of employment and responsibility. But I got to tell you, man, a $100,000 hit, I mean, that's a tough one on the Cunningham-Hodges household, wouldn't you think?
I think that's one hell of a pay cut, and you know it makes one wonder what actually happened at the Northwest Area Foundation, if anything at all, that we allege, to jump him over there. Like you said, Mr. Edwards, he might got a hell of a package. We won't find out here for another year.
Well,
and a half.
Yeah, but you know that kind of a package runs into the possibility of a discrimination unless the departing director she received a hell of a package or parachute because. You're talking about some gender discrimination there?
Oh,
you know, you're going to pay the guy $111,000 more than you paid her, and she put in 20 years, 15 as director, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct?
You are absolutely correct, sir. You are absolutely correct.
Okay, so you've got to be careful if you're MEDA in what kind of package you put together for the outgoing director who happens to be, well, she's a minority, she's Asian.
Yes.
She's a woman, a gender.
A very nice woman, yes.
Yes. Had a chance to meet her a couple of years ago at one of the golden dinners that MEDA had. But we want to go over those numbers again. She received $101,000 in salary, $24,000 in compensation.
In benefits,
the
yes.
Very powerful Gary Cunningham, head of the powerful African-American Leadership Council, member of the very powerful Met Council and et cetera, received $200,000 and $34,000 in compensation, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, wow. Well, I will tell you, Mr. Alden, that I posted 2 days ago on my website, the MinneapolisStory.com, I did pose 7 questions to Mr. Cunningham and Mita, and really the Northwest Area Foundation. And one of the questions was, at what point did he know that he was leaving the Northwest Area Foundation? Because my examination, and I talked to the National Philanthropic Association of America, these are the big, powerful boys and girls, and there appears to have never been a search for a successor to the outgoing director.
Yes.
Have you been able to find anything? I asked my associate, Mr. Alden, if he would conduct a parallel forensic audit. And have you found anything which would differ with what I've just indicated to you?
I haven't found anything online, any job. I've been to most of the nonprofit, Minnesota Council on Nonprofits, where they normally would post a job of this high profile. And I've seen nothing, Mr. Edwards, nothing at all whatsoever. And this seems to be, to me, it looks like there might be some kind of violation going on right there as far as law is concerned on, you know, the EOE. You're supposed to post a job. I don't care even if you're going to hire someone already. You're supposed to at least post it for 7 to 10 days, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm asking these series of questions, Ms. Dallin, and let's give the phone number, because maybe some people are saying we want to ask these guys some questions. Our phone number, go ahead.
The phone number is 347-426-3904. And, Ms. Harris, I just got to say this. We need to stick with this Cunningham piece, but we do have Fifth Ward 5 City Council member Blog Yang.
It's always important to show deference and respect. Let's ask the councilman to join us.
Okay. Councilman Yang, how are you, sir?
Doing well. How about the both of you?
Oh,
we can't
wonderful.
Complain. Does no good. What can we do for you, sir?
You know, I just thought I'd call to answer some questions. Mr. Edwards, you called me a little bit earlier, and I thought I'd just return the phone call and just, you know, answer some questions.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the swiftness in which you responded. To our listening audience, a couple hours ago, I called Councilman Yang because, and I've already spoke about it in kind of preliminary kind of way. I had received reliable information that earlier today, it appears, that a letter had gone, sir, from your office to director, executive director, Velma Corville, actually indicating a vote of no confidence and calling upon her to resign. Now, we wanted to be fair and give you a chance to indicate if there's any such circumstances now at play or if that's just some people putting out. But one of the sources that was intercepted talking about this, because they also said that if Velma goes, they'll go, was Francois. And so I just wondered, is there something at play? Is Ms. Corville in trouble?
Mr. Edwards and Mr. Allen, I can tell you that nothing's come out of my office. I think what you might be referring to was a letter that was written by the Asian American Organizing Project, and they did write a letter to the mayor and other council members, and they sent it to the press with regard to that, but nothing from my office, though.
Okay, well, see, that's the way we wanted to do it, to hear it from the source, to get absolute clarification. I will indicate this to you, though, Councilman, and to my colleague. In my television program to air Sunday, and as well as in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, I call for a resignation as a former chairman of the Civil Rights Commission and one of the authors of the civil rights legislation of almost 50 years ago. I've called for a resignation, so I want to be upfront with our listening audience. I just think it's time for her to go. Mr. Allen?
Right, well,
Councilman, go right ahead.
Go ahead.
Today at the executive committee meeting, I mean, there was discussion about the letter that was threatening the employees currently, you know, employed with the city of Minneapolis's civil rights department, and you know, Council President Johnson made some pretty strong comments about how she felt about that letter and, you know, other related things. And so, I mean, that's the extent of it. I mean, I wasn't a part of that meeting, obviously, and I'm not a part of that committee. And so I really don't know what was to happen. I think that, you know, there was maybe some interest in looking at what discipline, you know, might arise and those sorts of things. But, again, I wasn't a part of the conversation.
Okay. And just for our listening audience, Councilman Ford, because we are talking both to a local, national, international audience, the councilman is not a member of the executive committee of the city council, which is basically comprised of, well, when it first started out years ago when they used to be Republicans, there were seats reserved for Democrats and Republicans and the mayor. And, of course, there hasn't been a Republican, you know, a declared Republican member of the city council in probably, I don't know, 50 years. But anyways, the other person, non-DFLer, that sits on the exec committee is a Green Party candidate, Mr. Gordon. And so there are limited seats, and it's a part of the city charter and et cetera, so that's the reason that the councilman is not a member of that committee. So that we are clear on that. Now, am I to understand, although you were not there, did you sit in on the meeting or do you just stayed away?
I just stayed away.
Okay.
Anybody can pull up the meeting. It's on our website and it's probably on YouTube as well.
Yes, yes. Now, I do believe that Eric Roper of the Minneapolis Star Tribune and Mr. Allen, as we're talking, may want to, I'll try to kind of hold the councilman here with a couple of questions. You may want to check because I think that Eric Roper has posted already. In fact, he probably posted it around 4:35 o'clock. Some of the comments made by Council President Barb Johnson and maybe Cam Gordon, who is also a member of the exec committee. Is that correct, Councilman, that Cam Gordon still sits as a member?
Yeah, he is. He is a member of the executive committee.
Right, because he is the only Green Party
right.
member, and he consequently has the right to hold what is called the minority chair. Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
Can tell you the other members are the council president, Barb Johnson, the vice president, Elizabeth Clinton, the majority leader, John Quincy, and another BFLer, Kevin Reich, and then Cam Gordon, and then the other member is the mayor.
The mayor, that's right. I have to ask that question. I mean, I assume that Mr. Roper will. But, of course, was the mayor there, or was she traveling again today, or what?
You know, you can look at the footage. I haven't.
Okay.
We'll
do that. We'll do that.
Yes.
Just asking the questions. All right, sir. I appreciate you taking the time to call us in the evening when I know you want to be with your constituents and your family. Appreciate it. We've cleared the air. There has been no letter from you. What was the name of the organization again, though, that had sent a letter?
Yeah, the Asian American Organizing Project.
Hmm. Okay.
And you know, you will find on their letterhead that I'm one of the people that is a part of their advisory board or their board, but I had nothing to do with that letter, and they did it on their own.
Naturally, certainly. Well understood. Yes, gotcha. Well, like I said, I want to be and provide as much candor, Mr. Allen and Councilman Yang, that in my column and TVN news programs, I have, as a former member of the Civil Rights Commission, on two occasions over a 40-year period, and as one of the original drafters of the civil rights legislation in the early 1960s, I'm calling for a resignation. I think it's time for her to move on. Okay.
Yes,
Mr. Allen, you have anything?
No, I don't. I'd like to thank Councilman Yang for calling in. Greatly appreciate it. And that's all I have.
All right.
Well,
thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Very appreciate
right,
it. Thank you.
Mr. Edwards, we have another caller. Do we want to just go down the list here?
Let's just go. We want to get the callers in. Go right ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Am I live?
Yes, you are, sir. Yes, you are.
Yeah,
it is you.
Start off with identifying myself. I'm Mr. M.
Okay.
I'm a previous caller to the program and a follower of the program and a supporter of you gentleman's mission. So I'm
all right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for allowing me to have a few words here. But I'm very interested in the Minneapolis civil rights situation. And actually, you know, historically, and I don't really need to, prompt Mr. Edwards on any historical matters because he's certainly enlightening all of us here in the community, and we certainly appreciate that. But I do want to call upon a circumstance where there was an individual by the name of Kenneth White, and I'm sure Mr. Both of you gentlemen,
Mr. Edwards, yes. He was a friend. He was a personal friend. I had known him for many, many years. Just for clarification and clarity, Mr. White is deceased. Died a couple years ago. Grew up in South Minneapolis. His family, a very, very large family. In fact, at one point, they had a barbecue place right there on Lake Street, in between, what was it, Park and Fourth and such. Go right ahead, sir. Your question
right.
about
and
Mr.
Fact,
White.
His father-in-law was a longtime maintenance person at Central High School and a mentor to so many kids coming up in the South Minneapolis community.
Yes,
but
sir.
Where I'm going with that is that, you know, he led the civil rights, you know, department and then was on the cusp of really doing some really great things with the civil rights department.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I saw from the outside, he was really, you know, upended and subverted from doing those things. The more he tried to do, the more obstacles were put in his way. And it pretty much
You're absolutely correct, sir. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much ended with what was a false type of situation where his son-in-law got an entry-level job with the Human Rights Department. Now, this is a young man that went to college, who I knew him too.
Mm-hmm.
Went to college, went through the civil service process, and got a job.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that they held against Mr. White, among other menial, other type of things to force him out.
Mm-hmm.
And over that period of time, at that time, he was, like I say, on the cusp of really doing some things in Minneapolis civil rights. And it just seems like every time you pull up, there's always the forces that say, well, no, they might be able to do a little bit too much. So we'll have to pull the plug on that.
Yeah.
And after he left, the whole organization became just a rudderless ship. I mean, and now with the current administration, I mean, it's very apparent. I mean, if the reports are true, and I mean, the reports are so many, they have to have substance somewhere. And employees are saying, well, they're being threatened and they're in fear of their jobs. And, well, with that type of atmosphere, the employees can't perform their duties. And if the employees can't do their job, then the manager is derelict in his or her duties, and they need to go. And, I mean, it's a very clear situation, but because it's the Minneapolis Civil Rights and because they really want to keep it in turmoil, they want to just keep it so it's spinning its wheel, so it's not really doing anything. This is another...
Well, let me just cut in and say something. I mean, you're absolutely on point. Tomorrow, maybe, though the discussion inside the exec committee today that Councilman Yang was gracious enough to halfway share with us in regards to what he can discuss, because it has turned into a personnel matter involving Velma Cordell and some of her senior staff. But Eric Roper was to have written today, they obviously put it off, the second story in Bombshell, and that is the continued decrease in the numbers of African Americans and others of color, but particularly African Americans, in receiving contracts and other remunerations, if you will, from the city of Minneapolis, including workforce and et cetera. And actually, M, what has happened is that the percentage of African Americans receiving contracts and et cetera and actually even being employed has fallen below 1%. Okay? The figure will appear in the paper at about, since 2010 it's dropped from about 8.5% minority participation to about 5.3%, and within that 5.3% is less than 1% African Americans. That's both contracts, jobs, and et cetera. And apparently, in more private conversation, the council has expressed disdain and embarrassment because the figures were being tampered with, if you will. And, of course, we as a journalist have been reporting that for the last 5 or 6 years, and
yes,
folks like the leadership council and et cetera under Mr. Cunningham and his crew had said that Louis King and others had attacked this columnist and journalist as saying that we were providing bogus information. We are always trying to stir up, you know, manure and such things as that. And I'm quite sure there'll be a different posturing because the white folks will say it in the paper over the next couple of days.
Well, I think those numbers just point up the abject failure of what, and the way they have just unharnessed the organization, so the organization can't do anything. That's the way they want to keep it, because with those type of numbers, the Minneapolis Civil Rights could put lawsuits. The Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission could put pressure. Pressure to make them do and come to the table and do the things that they need to do with those facts and figures. And that's what their job is, to compile those and to bring the public.
Yeah, well, and also let me remind that our listening audience who have been with us for a long time on these programs is that in October of 2010, see, I always love to give the history, so we don't have to listen to the naysayers and the player haters. In October of 2010, a $500,000 study that had taken 6 years to compile the information, particularly after Mr. Ken White was extricated out of the department a couple years before that. In October of 2010, a 400-page document called Disparity Study was released and presented to the City Council. Now, one of the council members who was sitting there heard the critique by Dr. Wainwright, and there were some folks that I know, I'm just laying for them to say that it didn't happen because they were in the council chambers with me. We were in the council chambers. Dr. Wainwright came here from Austin, Texas. His firm, one of the most prestigious research firm, joining with a woman by the name of Dr. Charlene Hoyt of Chicago, Illinois, one of the premier statisticians and experts on diversity and et cetera, had put this study together, and they clearly indicated what the mission should have been, that the mission was being aborted, that there was an opportunity to get back on track, if you will. These were the solutions that needed to be implemented, blah, 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 okay? Velma Carvel did just the opposite of everything that was presented in that document of October 22nd, 2010, and the study that the council was looking at today and have been looking at for the last 8 or 9 or 10 days, which was a management study, clearly indicates that it even got worse because the numbers really started dropping after 2010.
Well,
now,
well, why,
Mr. Roper
is supposed
to touch on that, but we're not sure that his editors will allow him to do that.
But Mr. Edwards, why can outsiders that don't live in this community, that have nothing to do with this community, come in and look at these figures, and within the time it takes to put pen to paper, make these deductions? And the people that are entrusted in being paid thousands of dollars to do these jobs can't see it.
I know. It's a good question for the council and for the mayor and for our leaders who are quick to say that we're making progress. I don't know how many times I've heard the African-American Leadership Council and some of the power brokers who are, you know, saying they're getting jobs for African-Americans on the stadium and et cetera, say that we're on the right track, things are going great. African-Americans are working hand over fist. I say on my television program for airing Sunday, I specifically monitored a construction street repair project going on right now over on Washburn and Xerxes and back towards Thomas and et cetera. Man, I stood out there yesterday and the day before. I ain't seen no brother. I ain't seen nothing that looks even close to me, okay?
Well, Mr.
It's just not happening.
And Mr. Allen, I just have one final question.
Mm-hmm.
Just one question. Who is the African American Leadership Council?
Oh, it's
Let
me break this down for you. There's an African American Leadership Council, and there's an African American Leadership Forum. The forum got started by Gary Cunningham. Okay. He started in people's homes a few years back, I think around 2008, 2009. And then they got all the bourgeoisie types and got together and says, we're going to have this African-American leadership forum to kind of set the pace for them. Okay. They excluded the woman on the corner of Penn and Glenwood with three kids and went to the – it turned into a social cabal. They haven't – really done anything except pay a lot of consultants to come in there and tell them, you know, maybe you should put out a glossy magazine. Glossy magazines are expensive. You know, a lowball figure would be about 30 grand. And so that's basically what they've done. They featured some of their political, DFL political hacks, favorites on the cover of these magazines, and actually push an agenda that really has done nothing except, you know, socialize. That's my view on the whole thing.
Yeah, I have to concur. Yeah.
Well,
concur.
I mean, these things, African American Leadership Councils Forum, I mean, they sound no more effective than the Mystic Knights of the Sea. I mean, this is what it sounds like to me. You know, I mean,
and that came out of the Amos and Andy hour.
We need to put a stop to this foolishness. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, this is real jobs. This is, you know, life is too short for this. And I mean, this
absolutely
is on the serious tip. You know,
what you guys
are doing as crusaders, I mean, this is so important to keep this message out there. It's being suppressed. It's not going to come through the Johannesburg Times, as it's been affectionately called.
Yes.
It has to come, you know, continue for us. We have to continue to make these voices, because as long as they're out there, they will be heard. And as long as they're heard, you know, there's that chance that this thing can keep going. But you can't be silent, is my point.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, him.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Okay. Mr. Allen, I'm...
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Again, that phone number, in case, you know, folks want to call, because we've been talking and identifying some names. I imagine there are factions out there that are not happy with us doing that, but we're just doing what the record shows. Oops.
Yeah, and that Mr. E was right on point, because, Mr. Edwards, if you look at it, let's just go to 2008. Let's just say that the African-American Leadership Forum was established or started to get established in 2008. We've had hundreds of shootings, massive amount of deaths, children being killed in the street, education just down the tubes for the African American and the Native American child. We have not had one press conference. There's not been one complaint about anything.
No, because some of the leaders within the groups that you're talking about have indicated that it's something that they don't get involved with, that they are not involved with the public safety of the community. They're involved with pretending that they're employing people so that we can have some semblance of public safety. They do a great job on that. But I've heard the statements being made, Mr. Allen, over the last 8 or 9 weeks as things have spiraled out of control here in our city, that's not their thing. You know, they really don't have time for that. Of course, I imagine they would have one of their nephews or daughters or nieces or et cetera, I imagine they would raise hell to the high heavens. I mean, just an example, again, for our listening audience, even in Minneapolis, because there was nothing in the paper this morning, by the way, two young African-American men were gunned down in North Minneapolis last night, one wounded very seriously. Of course, any wound is serious when you get shot. One young man was shot in the head. The other one was shot in the body, in the back. The decision has been made just to kind of sweep that under the rug, keep that quiet. We had a young man shot and killed 2900 block of Girard, if you will, a Mr. Morgan. And Mr. Morgan's family is asking for answers. The police are saying, I'm obligated to indicate, police are saying that they have a suspect that they're getting ready to move on, if you will, and hopefully there will be someone in custody by certainly tomorrow or the next day. I'm just not sure. But, again, two shot last night. We've had 42 consecutive nights of shootings.
Wow.
Shots have been fired. People have been shot and et cetera. 42 consecutive evenings, if you will, days and nights, if you will. So I thought the Fate Patrol under the leadership of V.J. Smith were on the streets since Monday when they had – press conference that they were going to take control of the situation and bring order to chaos, if you will. That's my new theme, bring order to chaos.
Yes.
I don't know where they were last night or the night before or even Monday night when they debuted, because the gunfire has not stopped. The casualties have not ended, if you will. And I'm being told, Mr. Allen, on my side of the highway that once they have the retreat, you know, once they have the retreat, they will bring forward an agenda to bring order and tranquility and peace to chaos, if you will. So we wait until mid-July, you know.
We'll see. Well, we have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, is this me?
This is me. Yes, you.
This is you. This is me. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm calling in. I just kind of like tuned in, and after listening to the last caller, I heard him say a lot about Mr. White and the Civil Rights Department. And one thing I want to say is, when he was Mr. White, I'm assuming Kenneth White was the head of the Civil Rights Department. One thing, I mean, I worked for that department. And one thing that got me into that department is fighting for my community. And one thing I would say that he represented was he represented the people in the community. At that time, there was a lawsuit against Daddy Rocks that the city of Minneapolis Civil Rights Department did hold them accountable for not allowing African-American men into their club because their jeans were saggy, which I don't support, but it was a form of discrimination as far as them not wanting African Americans in their club. And so I noticed that under his leadership in that department, he represented more of the community. And also, one thing I noticed while working in that community or in that department was that this was a director that did not follow the politics, as if because everyone is working in the same building, the building over there at 350, that you didn't have to, even though you did go to lunch with these people, you did not have to, like, follow suit with them as far as you had to take sides. He took more sides with the community, and that was something that I did really appreciate. But then when there was a movement to remove him, then we had a lot of people coming up. We had someone come in. Her name was Van White, who focused more on trying to be friends with everybody than trying to work on behalf of the community who was suffering most, those who were oppressed. And so I saw that, and after listening to the last caller and listening to or reading about Velma Corbell, I can see how easily it is for a leader to go ahead and say, well, I want to be friends with you, the chief of police, even though you have your officers out here killing our people, killing our brothers. I want to be friends with the mayor, even though you're not paying attention to what's going on in our community. I want to be friends with you because we're all in the same building, and I'd rather support you more than I go out here and support the community, because you're going to look at me as if I'm not loyal to me when the community is looking at me in a way that I really don't care about. And so the recklessness that we have, I mean, when we look at Velma Corbell, I think that it's very important that she is replaced. She shouldn't stay there if she's not representing the community that those civil rights laws were written for. It's not written for her to try and be friends and buddies, because it's kind of like the same pattern that someone came in after Kenneth White to try and keep that going. So I really do think that she really do need to be replaced. And so as far as, like, the crime that we have going on in our community, I don't know if the mayor is trying to make it seem like under her watch that crime has improved. She put a whole lot of police on the streets, but then she's not looking at how many jobs that our young kids need. We're here in the summertime where kids are out of school. They need jobs. They need something to do. And so when it comes to sweeping these shootings and all these things under the rug, I mean, I don't know if she's trying to get a trophy and if she got control over the media or whatever, but I think that our community is really tired of this political game that they are trying to play. And it's very important that for us who recognize that, you know, as far as our voices that need to be heard, and I'm piggying back on the last caller, that our voices need to be heard, because it's really not about the politicians. It's about the people who vote for these politicians, because we have a voice. There are things that we want in our community, want to be done, want to change. And after fighting for the answers for Terrence Franklin, after fighting for the answers for what went on with our African-American brothers or our minorities who suffer from officers out in the suburbs who are kicking them out of, beating them down after they're in the suburban bars or in Wisconsin, where the Wisconsin Police Department even had to hold the Minneapolis police officers accountable for their ignorance. You know, these are things we have a voice. We voted for them people to get in that office, and I think that we really need to take our votes very serious. We don't need to be running campaigning for these people, and then once they get in office, if they don't do what they say they're going to do, we need to vote and get them out of there. We need to stop working
on that. All right. Appreciate your comments. Those were very compelling and very in-depth. Appreciate it. Mr. Allen, you have any observation?
I agree with everything the caller just said. I mean, she's right on point about it. You know, it's everyone's buddy-buddy. You know, it's
that's right. Thank you, caller.
Thank you for asking me to call in, too. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let me just make one historical point as pertains to the late Ken White, affirmative action, civil rights director, along with the legendary Larry Blackwell, who was the affirmative action director for the city of Minneapolis for 19 years. Both of them basically pushed out at the same time, even though Mayor Sharon Sells Belton had been supportive of them. But forces within our own community began to move around, and the attacks came, Helter Skelter. Star Tribune wrote some stories and et cetera. Questions were raised. And as a caller said, as M said, once we lost Ken White just about the end of the 1990s, things just fell apart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, Don? Just absolutely and tragically fell apart.
Yeah. I agree.
But let's get that phone number, and then I want to go into a piece of historical information that our community has a right to know, particularly in light of statements by, again, Mr. Cunningham, the new director of MEDA.
Wait, that number is
so that's the number on out there for us, Don.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Okay. Well, are we talking about I know we are. It's kind of a rhetorical question, but Gary Cunningham, the civil rights person in Boston and also here in Minneapolis, somehow.
And where now? Where'd you say?
In Boston, according to his bio a while back here, he was like with the civil rights out there. And then here in Minneapolis, I think he was.
You said he was the affirmative action director in Boston, Massachusetts?
Yeah, Boston. Remember? Remember a while back he had that was like written.
What I'm saying, Mr. Allen, that was totally untrue.
He
was never even employed by the city of Boston. Yeah, he wasn't employed.
And this is a guy here locally, Mr. Edwards. Now, wasn't he a part of the large Black Panther movement here in Minneapolis or in Twin Cities?
Here's what happened on that. In fact, I wrote a couple pieces. I was critical of his declaration, which I knew as one who was here and a part of the movement, the Black Consciousness movement. I don't know nothing about any Black Panthers. We know that the federal authorities attempted to put something in place as part of sting operation, but there was never any Black Panthers. But Mr. Cunningham said that he was a member of the Black Panthers during the period of 1967, 68. That was totally untrue, Mr. Allen. First of all, he'd have been 8 or 9 years old. And in my column, I raised a question on how that could have been. You know what I mean? But what has happened is because of the, some criticism from supporters of him and his wife and et cetera, we decided to unveil some documents which are extremely sensitive, and I'll do it like this. I'm reading from a document that has been, I'll use this specific word, Mr. Allen, you'll understand, has been declassified.
Yes.
You understand what that means, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Now, these documents are documents that have been in my possession, and specific document is, and I know that M, as an example, would appreciate this. I'm reading from a document dated 12-1-69. 1969, Don.
Wow.
To the director of the FBI, code title 100-448008, from agent in charge, Minneapolis, code 157-438. The subject is counterintelligence program, black nationalist hate groups, racial intelligence. And it refers to two additional correspondence dated 8/29/69 and 11/17/69, in which I'll read a part of it very quickly. Phone lines are, of course, open. Continued coverage by Minneapolis through racial informants, confidential sources, and police liaison fail to develop any information that there are any organized black nationalist-type hate groups operating in the Minneapolis division, with the exception of the Nation of Islam group, whose membership has remained consistent. This group has met this group has not been involved in any racially crisis disturbance in the Minneapolis division. You'll have to really understand this one, Don, and this will conclude this particular memo. Minneapolis is continuing to emphasize equal information coverage and will continue to enlarge coverage of Negro community. A few Negro militants in this division have been unable to get any type of organization started, inasmuch as the vast majority of the Negro people in this Minneapolis-St. Paul area are hardworking, intelligent, straight-talking, straight-thinking individuals who have been the first to decry any type of racial violence in the Twin Cities. And then, of course, the signature is, you know, by law has been whited out, et cetera. So I'm puzzled. There are other documents I have, which at this point I just don't think we want to deal with this because it will expose some who are now deceased who are informants. But we have a rather interesting file that has been acquired, and it is the Federal Bureau of Investigation surveillance file, FBI files on black extremist organizations and the COINTEL and et cetera, which many of us talked about. And there are additional references to Minneapolis, and again, the absence of Black Panther presence in any shape, form, or fashion in the city of Minneapolis. And I will indicate an additional document as an example, dated 5/28/1970, Don. And it is a letter from the agent in charge here in Minneapolis to the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation indicating everything is in order and that some dirty tricks had been played in an attempt to highlight the presence of a Black Panther Party as a part of the COINTEL program. You've heard about that as a younger man. But it had not been successful. Okay?
Interesting.
Phone line is open. Anybody's got a question, buddy. But I'm not sure why Mr. Cunningham chose to identify himself as a Black Panther during the period of 1967, 68, even 1966, when no such organization existed, but when he would have been age, you know, 8, 9, and maybe 10.
That is pretty funny. That is just, no, not good at all. For his profile.
And again, for anyone that wants to challenge, if you will, we are talking about memoranda that has been declassified. When it was declassified, we'll keep that to ourselves, if you will. But it clearly indicates that, and it was part of the genesis of where I was coming from when I said, well, first of all, I knew Mr. Cunningham, and I knew that certainly there was no Black Panther grouping here in Minneapolis, and secondly, if there was, they weren't using 8- and 9-year-old children, okay? But I just thought I would put into the record these confidential memoranda from the Minneapolis division, as they identified themselves, oftentimes referred to as the Minneapolis office, to the director of the FBI and to the counter intelligence units and to the COINTEL program that was ultimately found to be in existence, and also a memo dealing with the kind of dirty tricks that the FBI was playing, including having Negro operatives stick people up and indicate that we the Black Panther Party. Okay? It is contained in the document dated 5/28/1970. It's kind of frightening because this has been going on for a long time, Mr. Allen. Okay. You got that phone number? If you want, you can shoot it on out there.
Yep. Phone lines are open again, 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. Give us a call.
Mr. Allen, you have any question? Any question? Because I imagine we'll basically be talking to ourselves. I see a lot of people being very uneasy with this kind of intel. Oh, by the way, one of the sting operations that the FBI put in place, and this was really funny. I have to say this as a longtime activist and et cetera. One of the operations was a center, and I'm going to see if you pick up on it, Don, called the Martin Luther King Huey Newton Center at 613 Selby Avenue in St. Paul. Now, anybody that knew anything about the Negro community knew that there was no commonality between Huey Newton and the soon-to-be-assassinated Martin Luther King Jr.
No, none at all, none.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Well, you know, I was trying to get in touch, Mr. Edwards, with Mr. Lenny Chisholm because there was some shocking data that has come out, which, again, if you follow the breadcrumbs, it points right back to our leaders telling us ridiculous things like we'd have 10,000 jobs and we're to do this and MnDOT is fine, you know, as long as they slide the Urban League a little money here, a little Luther King and those guys and some of the Academy a little change, but this report came out, brought to us by Springboard Economic Development Corporation, and it's very shocking. We have $363 million, which is a little bit over $250 million there, and from a period of October 2013 to March 31st, 2014. And out of that money, it looks like one black contractor received $981. One.
How much? You mean $800,000?
No, $981.
You must have misspoke.
No. Nine $100 bills, four 20s, and a single one. That was it. Mr. Chisholm, are you with us?
Well, I imagine you can buy a lot of cereal, milk, and pay rent and everything off that, right?
Oh yeah.
You here, Doc.
Yeah. Hey, we have Mr. Chisholm live with us.
Go ahead now.
Hey, we have Lenny Chisholm from Springboard Economic Development Corporation. Glad you could call in. Can you explain kind of the back end of what's going on here with the MnDOT piece?
I don't know if does that have an explanation. Thanks for having me on.
No, I got a headache now. So
I don't know if that has an explanation, Don. I mean, they've been at this with this group called the Collaborative since 2008, November 2008. And this is their results. I think the results speak for itself. The moderator for the group has been paid over $100,000 since 2008.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Chisholm. What does the moderator moderate? What is the purpose of the moderator?
Well, she moderates that we don't get no money, black folks. I mean, I'm presuming that's high on her list of things to moderate.
Okay.
Because
who are the black members of this committee?
Well, you know, it's had various colored folks on it. You know, I mean, it's kind of, you know, without naming all the names, but it's got the who's who of the black community has been on it. But
wow.
The issue is...
Well, let me ask you a question because you stay away from name. Was this a committee that Ken McKnight was formerly a member of?
Yes, I do believe she was part of it, too, at some point. Yes, she was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, without, you know, I just said, man, to name the names, you could go... I stopped going to the group years ago because the moderator, who is a civil rights specialist, by the way, white lady, she said that our tone was aggressive and threatening to her. And I thought to myself, I said, courageous and aggressive, they go hand in hand. But to make a long story short, the group has been together since 2008, November 2008, right before the stimulus money. And these are the results they've gotten most recently. And these results, I believe, are probably accurate because for a while, MnDOT could not even, were producing data that was suspicious.
Mm.
And according to an audit that was done last year by the Minnesota legislature, requested by a member of the Minnesota legislature, I think it was Representative Beard, that audit showed that the MnDOT numbers could not be verified.
Ooh.
And thus they hired people to make sure the numbers were verifiable now. So I think these are accurate numbers.
Oh, no.
Okay, okay. What has been the position of our two black state senators?
Well, they've been hesitant to endorse legislation that the West Washington State DOT is now undertaking. And that legislation is that they want to separate the goals. The FHWA has combined goals where they put women and minorities in the equal. Well, the women have to show that they are still disadvantaged in order to be in the system. But if you're getting 99% of the money, because out of that latest report, less than $750,000 went to all the minorities on the report, and the other 40, I think it was $43 million or $45 million, I can't recall the exact number, went to non-minorities, which in this case was either white women or a combination of white men, and then the remaining of it went to the major firms. So thus, if you calculate the number, $750,000 out of $363 million, is what was given in the last 6 months, which would equate to a number I would think is over 99%.
Okay. So is anybody contemplating any kind of lawsuit, any kind of legal action? Have you sent anything to the Department of Labor, the Justice Department? I mean, is anybody raising any legal questions?
Well, here's the issue. The report requires that MnDOT achieve a 10.3 aspirational goal. That's what they were supposed to achieve, a 10.3 aspirational goal. According to the latest report, they received 12.8. If I'm not incorrect on the numbers, I don't have it right in front of me. They exceeded the goals, and now they're at 12.8. So the lawsuit that would have to be taken, I'm not sure how you would proceed with it because they're doing everything under the letter of the law that currently exists.
And yet those numbers are acceptable under the letter of the law?
Because as long as white women equal minorities, those numbers are acceptable under the letter of the law. Because
that's right,
like
because unfortunately it's minorities and women. MBEs
minorities
and WMBs.
And women. It's a combined goal. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, with the stadium that they just built, the People's Stadium, they make a distinction of having women and minority contractors and separating the numbers that they want to achieve with each category. But when it comes
to 1 to 6%, the element alleged is 12%, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what they say.
But when it comes down to the federal highway in the Minnesota Department of Transportation, women and minorities under the federal program for USDOT are exactly equal.
Wow. Yeah, what is the Federal Office of Contract Compliance saying? Are they saying anything? Because normally they're the federal government entity that has the authority and power to look at all kinds of contracts, because these are clearly federal dollars. I mean, we couldn't build a guardrail without federal dollars in our highway program. So is the Federal Office of Contract Compliance saying anything?
Well, they're saying the same thing I just mentioned. They're all in compliance.
Okay, so there's fundamental compliance with the law. If Negroes don't get no work, too bad.
There you go. And if they get 1 cent out of it, they've done well.
Okay.
See, that's the real theory. If they've gotten, even if they don't get any money, because the program is not designed to ensure that they get money, only that the program follows the rules of the program.
Okay. So this is
and
consistent
unless they could
with
show
the doctrine.
The rules of the program were not followed.
Right. Okay. So this is consistent with the doctrine by Michael Jordan, previous the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, who in 2008. Was quoted extensively of saying, you have to understand that we could achieve our goals of of equity, equality, and et cetera, and not hire a single black person. That was Michael Jordan, civil rights director, Minneapolis Civil Rights Department in 2008. So it looks like that that's certainly a true statement. You know, just as long as we hire white women, right?
Yep,
okay.
100%. So if they go with 6.3 and they get 12.8, then if it achieves it all with white women, it's perfectly legal. And the Washington State DOT has asked the federal government to remove the white women from the DOT Federal Highway Program.
Right.
So that their state no longer can use that as a rationale for achieving the goals.
Wow.
Okay.
Now, here's the real caveat to that process. When you ask the white women contractors, are they now employing more minorities or are they using more minorities as part of their fulfillment of the goals, that's where you find out that they are part of a class that are not necessarily participating with affirmative action type action. They hire
right.
their friends, brother-in-laws, and family.
Oh, yeah.
Or passing the contract back to them. Right.
There you go. You're
taking a small amount off the top. Okay. All right.
So,
yeah.
So 99%. And, so we're now raising the concern that, and I think that's the issue that Congressman Ellison has avoided, his office has avoided, and I will say they've avoided it, along with Congressman Cummings' office, is that the Surface of Transportation Act is supposed to be reauthorized in September. And as part of that act, we've said, if the Congress has that, if one senator, Ted Cruz, can stop and filibuster an act, what can the Congressional Black Caucus do to the Transportation Act if we're not getting our opportunities out of it?
Our fair share.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, if one senator can stop it, they have to have a certain percentage of it has to go through in order for them to pass it in September. If they use the tri-caucus, which is the Hispanic, the Asian, and the black caucus, they could literally refuse to pass that law until they change it.
Are they politically committed to do that?
This bill came about, these programs came about during the years of Shirley Chisholm and the other ones
mm-hmm.
that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And the current, even though we have way more members of the federal government, the federal legislature, those are not the same type of we're going to get something done members.
Mm-hmm.
And thus this law has no chance of being repealed so that women can no longer count equally until somebody decides to take that mantle upon them. And I've been down to Washington several times, and I've said, if you're going to always count women and black men and black women together, and Asian and Hispanic and all of them together under this program, you will never get participation.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, I mean that's quite obvious. No doubt about it. And you say the position of our current congressional African-American Muslim congressman from the 5th Congressional District is silent?
They're evaluating it, you know. We're looking into it. At this time, though, our office is going to
Now, let me make sure I get my math correct. My congressman, isn't he a four-term congressman?
Is that a four-term? He can be five.
Going after his fifth term?
I think so.
Okay,
you know.
His
representative is coming to the meeting we're having with the FHWA. He's going to send a representative again, and I have a letter from Congressman Ellison critiquing the problem, but we've got no action on the problem because he's saying that their office is going to wait on Congressman Cummings, and Congressman Cummings' office is not taking any action.
And this is the African-American congressman from the congressional district in Maryland, right there throughout the city of Baltimore. Okay.
Correct.
Elijah.
He actually replaced the congressman that was very instrumental, and I want to say, I cannot, Ron, you probably know.
You talking about Perrin Mitchell?
Perrin Mitchell was very instrumental
right.
in his brother in getting this legislation put
his
in place.
His brother was Clarence Mitchell, who many called the the 101st Senator of the United States Senate back in the day when we didn't have any blacks, even before Ed Brooks, Clarence Mitchell. Okay, all right, okay, all right.
Yeah. Mm. So Clarence Farron Mitchell was replaced by Cummings, and look what we got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you got Sheila Congressman Richardson and Jackson Lee and all of these members that have been elected, and they have basically went in and had their districts in safe areas, and they aren't being challenged to do anything or present any opportunities through the federal legislation.
Yeah, that appears to be consistent. What do you think the reading is, unfortunately, for all of them, because this is an election year for every member, all 435 of the United States House of Representatives, and maybe 9 or 10, 12 senators, but every member of the House must stand for re-election. Do you think they're playing it safe at this point? And they'll basically tell you and other activists that we'll get on top of this in 2015?
Well, I think we're going to have an instance like Rep. Cantor had before we ever get ahead. We're going to have a rebellion within the party similar to that, the Democratic Party, to throw out. Even though you may be a Democrat, you still want to throw out one of the Democrats that are there in order for it to work. Because even though Rep. Cantor who lives in an affluent district, the Tea Party candidate still came in and unseated him. And that's the group that's getting the money.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk
in our case, if we're not getting the money, and we're not concerned about unseating a lame duck.
Okay. Mr. Allen, any questions on your end, man?
I'm still, processing all the information and looking at the paperwork that Mr. Chisholm sent over, and just wondering, how could this maybe, we need to send, Mr. Chisholm, we need to send an email over to the president of the Minneapolis NAACP, and the Urban League and those folks and see what they think,
I sent it over to them.
Oh, okay.
In all fairness, so what has been the position on, because you kind of said, and I know you misspoke there, they completed building the stadium. They're still in the process. They won't be close until 2016. What has been the position of the Sports Facility Authority and Alex Tittle? Are they in lockstep with you? Do they understand what's happening? I know we started out talking about Federal Highway, but it looks like this applies across the board.
Well, my concern was that if we have a company such as Thor Construction, are they still considered a small developing company, and what percentage of the work are they being allocated, and are they now funneling that work? I mean, if they're allocated the work and they're making up all the dollars for the work, then what opportunities are being removed from others?
Mm-hmm. Okay. As well as the hours, because allegedly it's no longer the personnel, it's the number of hours being worked. Mr. Tittle announced that about 2.5 months ago. So, okay. Is there any? Have you been involved in any discussions with Mr. Tittle? Is there any group that you pulled together that have asked any questions? We potentially asked
the
question on this program. When will we hear from him? In fact, we'd like for him to give us a call, wouldn't we, Mr. Allen?
Oh, sure, that'd be great. Yeah.
Well, you can go down and catch Mr. Tittle tomorrow morning. They got the MS, the Minnesota Sports Facility, has their board meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at the 1010 building on
Now, have they moved it back from Friday to Thursday? They now have it on Thursday?
Well, it's tomorrow morning. They've moved it around due to certain, but it's 1010 South 7th Street. That's where the meeting's at tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You go down there and put the mic in front of Mr. Tittle and ask him on the spot.
No, they're not going
like
to let you do that.
The other reporters do. They put the mic right there in front of him and ask him on the spot.
No, he's not going to do that. But just for your information, I've done that even before Alex Tittle got there.
Oh, okay.
I went down and did that. One of the things I found so disconcerting is that I looked up in August of 2011, and, a whole group of black leaders came down and said they speak for the black community, Wasn't nobody down there creating no hell. But that's a good idea. But I'd prefer to have Mr. Tittle come on the air so that thousands could listen to him. Because when you go to the Sports Facility Authority meeting, you know, nowadays they're down to probably 20, 25, 30 people in the room because all the deals have been cut. You know,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
that's
all the deals
last
have been
time
cut.
I was there.
And when were you there?
The 27th of May. I was down there on the 27th of May.
Wow.
And I'm on public record with my statement. I didn't make a public comment, so I'm down there already.
Yeah, you know, I am too. Yeah, and that was way back in 2011 when I saw Ezell Jones of Premier Insurance got the first piece of so-called MBE money. Yeah, raised some questions. Mr. Allen, anything on your end, man? This has been most invigorating.
No, I have nothing here. I was just checking the chat room, and it's loaded, and I'm trying to poke people to call in, and we're not getting any response, but, I mean, it's a lot of heavy information. But we are getting down to the wire with about a little bit under 60 seconds right now that we're looking at.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate you helping me get the knowledge out there.
All right, appreciate it, my brother.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Allen, good program. Yeah. Let James Brown take us on home, man, because that's all we got are the dreams of the past. Oops.
Oh,
and FBI reports.